As always, subscribe and click the notification bell on our YouTube channel. Be active on our Facebook group, East Coast Distressed Note Investing, and be sure to go to our website for all your note investing tools, resources, and available assets. If you have any questions, email us at tradedesk@jkpholdings.com.
Hey everyone, Dave Putz from JKP Holdings. As always, alongside me, Mr. Nathan Turner.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Sorry for a little bit of technical difficulty. Hopefully everyone can hear us okay and everything else. So what have you been up to, man?
Stuff. So you know what? I need to let people know, if you didn't know already, yesterday I was part of a one-day webinar training for that was going to benefit the Seller Finance Coalition. So awesome. if you missed it, you can still go get the recordings. All the money is going towards supporting the Seller Finance Coalition. Anybody who's creating notes, anybody who's buying seller finance notes, this is important to you, and it behooves all of us to help support this movement. We're trying to change some of the rules surrounding seller finance and make all of our jobs easier and make more notes available for all of us. So that's a big deal.
Awesome. So that's a really crazy situation. It finalized, for those who didn't know us, this last year, 2023, we've really focused on our webinars on seller finance notes, wrap notes, and you know that. We've done a ton of different webinars on that topic with some great experts.
We got some messages here. Couple people saying they can't hear you. They can hear me, but not
hopefully
you.
Hopefully they can hear me now. I did see my microphone was off before, so hopefully you can hear me now. Awesome. Okay. What I was amazed by is looking at this is, if you can't hear me, if you can hear me, let me know. If you can't hear me, either way. But what we found out was, I think we've done 67 different webinars.
Wow.
Which I'm shocked by.
Yeah.
Amazed. We've hit so many different topics over the last couple of years. I don't know where to start, where to begin, but I hope that we've gotten better. I'm hoping that we've done some really good stuff and we've helped a lot of people, beginners, experts, and everyone in between. You know, we've done a lot of stuff in this space, in notes in general, and we've made a lot of really, really awesome connections. So we first want to thank everyone who's been watching us, listening to us, tuning in.
Good for us.
Yeah. High five, dude.
I know. I've really enjoyed it. It's been really fun.
Yeah.
They're saying, Dave, they're saying still can't hear you very well. It's really low.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Vanessa. Appreciate that. I'll see if I can turn that up and make it a little louder for you. So if I have to change the microphone, I will. So I think for me, understanding what we're doing now is, where are we going next year?
Yeah.
Right. What are we going to do with our next level of information?
Yeah. We are getting to the end of this year, and it's one of those times where you take some time to reflect and see what has gone on and what we see coming up. And, you know, you can do that in the middle of April, but here we are. It's just kind of a good time to see that. But it's been really good. And like you say, we've done a bunch of shows now and talked to a whole bunch of different people. I feel like I've learned a lot and it's been really good. So looking forward to next year and learning more and talking to more people, seeing what we can do.
Yeah. And we appreciate any feedback you guys can offer us. We appreciate anything you guys can really kind of give to us that's been helpful, right? We really kind of want to keep pushing on and moving forward where, you know, we provide every kind of area of the note space to you from our point of view.
Yeah.
And to provide that in a way that is easy to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that we've done pretty well, like kind of looking back, is that we're trying to not just target one specific group. Like, we're trying to make this available for everybody, where somebody who's brand new can learn something and somebody that's been around for years and years can learn something as well.
Yeah,
Still getting comments that you're hard to hear, Dave.
Okay. Well, I will keep trying to figure it all out. I see Vanessa, it's better now. Hopefully we can get it working and everyone can kind of keep up with everything going on. We have a lot of people tuning in today. And I think what we have pushed for coming forward to us. Okay. I will change the mic. I appreciate it. Let me quickly change that for you guys so you guys can hear it better. Sounds like Nathan has no problem hearing me, which is good. Let me, I'll change as we, Nathan, can you want to share about what we got going on in January for those who are looking to get to the next level?
Man, so we started doing this this year, 2023, and going forward again. So we are doing an advanced, intermediate to advanced level note class. So we've run across a lot of people who have taken kind of a beginner's course and have learned a bunch of stuff, but don't feel like they have the necessary tools to kind of take the next step. So we're starting up again in January, our next iteration of our advanced class. January 9th is scheduled to be our first class, and it's a 5-week course. You're going to get homework. You're going to get tons of information, more advanced than you probably got in your beginner class. We're going to talk, we spend a lot of time, actually two classes, going through and working together to build your own bid calculator, which is a huge deal. You can use somebody else's and that's fine, but you need to understand how it works and why it works. And so we go through that with you on how to build your own so that you know how to modify it if and when the market changes.
Yeah. And I hope that we can help you build out what you're looking for. Because this space is not all about performing notes, right? Even though we've really done a great job of getting to a point where a lot of notes are performing, they're not always going to perform.
Right.
This misbelief that performing notes, we buy only performing notes or that's your target, those things will default. Eventually, they will. Not all of them, but they will eventually default. So we want to make sure that we can help out and create that calculator that really kind of gets you the leading edge on making sure you make an offer that makes sense to yourself. Not focus on what the seller always wants. Make sure it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, making sure you make an intelligent bid on today's, you know, market and performance of that note. But what happens if? What happens if the market goes down? What happens if the value of the property goes down? What happens if they stop paying? What if? And so we're trying to build that in for you to help you understand how it works and why it works and how you can deal with it going forward.
Absolutely. For those originators, please reach out. We have a special class for people who are originating debt. That's some private classes that teach you how to create sellable, valuable notes that you can really get the most money for. So we really encourage you to check that out as well. So, well, this hopefully everyone can hear is fine. I changed the microphone and I really excited. We're talking about the fact that we have not done a webinar with this gentleman in 2 years. It's almost 2 years a day. And I think it's one of the most watched, rewatched, re-listened to, and one we look forward to doing. So when we are excitedly joined by Mr. Polio, it is awesome and always a pleasure to have him.
Yeah.
What's up, David? How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. I hope you're both doing well. And as always, I appreciate the invite. And since I see you both there, you must completely, you both must be done with Christmas shopping and all the gifts. So, because otherwise, you should be out getting finishing up that right now.
Yeah.
You know what? After our show today, my wife and I are heading out, but not for Christmas shopping. We're actually done Christmas shopping. Today is our anniversary.
Whoa.
Anniversary. 22 years today.
Holy.
So
goodness.
We've been married a little while now. So we're going to go out, hang out for the rest of the day, go out this evening, go for dinner and things. So it's not for Christmas, but
22, the Mercedes year.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I thought it was paper airplanes, but I don't know.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. It's pretty fun.
So I hope that we can, you guys have a great, great night and a great weekend for each other. So David, for those who are not familiar who you are, give a quick kind of background. How'd you come across getting into notes? What have you done since, and what's your role now?
So I actually got into this whole industry because of a failed bank. Right after grad school, I worked in the bond department for Bank of New England in Boston. And 4 months after I started, that one Friday night, the regulators came in and took over the bank. And the one thing that I learned that grad school never taught me was not to put your entire life savings 401k into the company that you're working for, because I witnessed people that were there for 30 plus years and realized that their complete 401k was basically zero because the bank failure. It was very, I mean, it was a true education right there. So I tell my boys, I say, I tell them the story the whole time about that, just to kind of let them understand not to put everything in one basket. So that was in from 88 to 95. And so I was very fortunate to know what was going on and started with the asset marketing group. And our task was to liquidate the bad bank, which for then, for back then, it was 8 billion of bad assets. So the bank that bought the entire Bank of New England portfolios said, "We'll come in here and do the transaction, but we're not going to buy the 8 billion of bad loans. We want the FDIC to take them on and use us as an asset marketing group to liquidate the entire portfolio." So it took us 6 years to, and we had to, back then, we had to actually create the interest level through the Wall Street Journal, letting people know that we're going to put out, 50 pools next month, 100 of multifamilies, 200 ships, movie theaters, everything that they had in the portfolio, which took us, I said, about 5 years. And it took us an extra year because for the first year, there was congressional hearings for an entire year that stopped our process, which is very interesting. As soon as that was over, one of the major buyers from our portfolios back in Bank of England was SN through Rob Arkley. And so he kind of just said, "Listen, when you're done there, since you were analyzing and getting us to buy these portfolios, can you come over and start our acquisitions group?" So I started that in 95. And I'm still here. So it's been a long time. Throughout that process, I've been able to analyze, negotiate, and purchase probably over about 3 to 4 billion of residential portfolios and commercial. Started up the trading desk, which you guys know very familiar with, about 8 years ago. At the same time, started kind of working on relationships where we could now service for other hedge funds or buyers like yourselves, which we had never done that 8 years ago. We only serviced our own portfolio because we had plenty to service. And I really do enjoy the trading desk and the acquisition side. We're acquiring portfolios, but nowhere near what we were doing in the past. I would say we're probably good for purchasing around 25 million a year. And we kind of use like two or three just direct sellers, so they're not any of the clients that we put on the trading desk.
Gotcha.
Interesting. So are you guys ever buying any of the Fannie Mae pools, anything like that?
We're looking at a few of them, but they're at a process where if they put out four pools and one pool I can get very aggressive on, someone's going to swoop right in and buy the entire portfolio for less than what my bid would be. So we're kind of at that point where the big guys are still going to rule the nest there.
Yeah. Interesting.
So we're going to keep reviewing and bidding them, but it's going to be hard for us to buy a large chunk.
Yeah.
So we've seen a lot of changes over the last years of doing this. And one of the things we always want curiosity is, where are the sellers at right now? And before we go there, overall, what have you seen more of, performing, not performing, our borrowers paying bills? In the big scheme, what is the typical portfolio look like nowadays in regards to non-performing slash performing?
Well, it's definitely changed since our last Zoom call, 2 years ago. And, clearly the market has driven that. Back then, it was purely non-performing portfolios. We saw a ton of first lien NPL deals, quite a bit. And then it kind of started turning into where the equity in the properties were starting to rise, where we were now seeing a lot more RPL deals, loans that went through the system to reperform because the values have gone up higher. We started to see an asset that we hadn't seen in years, second liens. they started to pop up because of the equity. And so, the market started to turn into first lien NPLs, first lien RPLs, and then a second liens.
Gotcha.
That's interesting. I've thought over the last couple of years, especially because, like you say, equity was coming in. I didn't see equity on a note I was buying until 2018. I think that's the first time I ever saw equity.
Right.
And it's continued to grow since then. And that's been my hunch, is that a lot more of the second liens are being created because of all that equity spread. So that kind of confirms.
Right now they are. Yes.
Yeah.
I'll say the end of the third quarter, it was quite slow on the trading side, and the beginning of the fourth quarter was slow. And all of a sudden in the last 2 months, it started to pick up again.
Interesting.
So I'm hoping that's going to flow through to next year.
Yeah.
I think you guys did see the deals that I just put out recently. So it's starting to pick up once again.
Yeah. What have you seen for sellers in the ideas of, what is their expectations right now? Where do you think sellers are at? And is there a gap between where sellers are at and where buyers are at?
Well,
or is it grown or shrunk? I guess a better question.
I don't think it has changed. Okay. I think it's only changed the perception as the buyer feels that the seller's not coming down to their level of purchase price. So of course they're going to feel that everything is overpaid for. The block is going to be where the pricing is going to be higher, because for the example I gave you, where these guys are coming in and paying aggressive numbers just to get the funds out. So, they have no problem with which a lot of people don't understand is paying against legal balance due compared to unpaid principal balance. So if they're paying aggressive on a legal balance due, the odds of them trying to go out and sell those assets to someone else, to the medium and smaller guys, it's a transaction that just can't get done unless that next buyer is saying to themselves, all right, well, my return hurdle back then was 20%. Right now, I'm going to be happy with 12%. Mm-hmm. And so there's deals to get done, but there's no deals if you're still pricing and trying to, I guess, grab that return that you expected last year.
Gotcha. So what are some of the big mistakes sellers do or expect, or if someone wants to list assets with you guys, what are some of the big mistakes that they make currently or you've seen?
On the seller side?
Yes, on the seller side. Is there mistakes that you commonly see?
Yeah, on the seller side, some of the mistakes are they're listing non-performing loans as a classification, but they're actually assets that are could be making payments to a bankruptcy plan or a restructure or a modification. And so what that does is it takes that loan out of the hands of someone that thinks that they're buying off the tape a non-performing loan. Because that when they see that the payments are actually coming in, they may not be to the term, but the payments are coming in. They don't want to be, they're not in this to buy a loan, just to cash, just to collect the cash payments. So that seems to be an understanding of the seller side, where they're saying, where they could probably do a better job in classifying the assets, not as a true non-performing asset where someone may get control of the property, to someone that says, you know what, I'm going to have to work with the borrower and collect payments for the next 3 to 5 years.
Gotcha.
And then documentation, you know, a lot of times that they just don't take the time to go through the portfolio and say, all right, do I have original notes, original mortgages? Because that'll stop a deal for a lot of the, someone who's buying it for the direct RA account, that probably will stop a deal because they have to have certain hurdles that they must hit before they can fund on the transaction.
Are they being priced at non-performing prices?
Yeah, they are actually. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think the seller's expectations are fairly in line where the market is.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because I don't see them selling assets or asking me to list stuff on the desk anywhere near par and above, unless it's a special asset that once I send you the tape, you can clearly see that, you know, it's going to be a good rate. If someone has a rate of 15.5% and the equity is an LTV of 30%, it's obvious that they're looking for a par.
Yeah. So we have some few questions coming in. I'm going to define par real quick. Par is the amount of the balance of the loan that's due. That would be considered par. Another question from Rich was a non-performing. A non-performing note, it says non-performing would be a property and pre-foreclosure count as non-performing. Yes, it could be, right? That's a kind of a parameter. But non-performing means that the borrower is 90 days delayed, that haven't paid 90 days, and you can start legal. So that's technically, they can be, you know, if they're 2 months delayed, they're technically non-performing, but you can't do any kind of legal action until it's 90 days past due. And that's when they're considered, in our world, non-performing asset. There are some that are rolling 60s and whatnot, and they call them sub-performers. But yeah, unless you can file any kind of legal suit. And understand that when you're buying these notes, these are all pre-foreclosures. These are borrowers' debts on books. So those who are looking for REOs or pre-foreclosures, you may never see these assets ever because the legal process hasn't begun yet. So hopefully that makes sense, Rich. Thanks for the question.
So yeah, and that also, someone would take a look at a tape, and if they're looking for an REO, they should be looking at the tape occupancy rate. The occupancy should be vacant. A non-performing vacant property will get you an REO sooner than an occupied would.
Yes.
Most of the time, but even then, sometimes I've had it where I thought it was vacant and then I bought the note and then all of a sudden somebody shows up and I was like, oh, somebody is there. Okay. And then it just changes the strategy and, you know, information that you didn't have previously, but that can throw a wrench sometimes.
Yeah. So let's switch gears here. I know everyone wants to know these questions. What are some of the big mistakes the buyer side of the space is? And what are some of the things that those who are either in the space already or want to get into it should make sure that they don't do when making offers and looking at assets?
Yeah. It's presentation of professionalism. You know, you've got to present yourself in a way that you're looking to do what you say you're going to do. You know what you're doing. You feel comfortable in what you're doing. And it's not just a spur of the moment where, hey, I'm just going to try to go buy notes tomorrow because it sounds fun. And that's why, you know, I do believe in like your group and others that the mentorship is important because I feel I'm comfort from my side. I'm going to feel a lot more comfortable knowing that someone spent the time and money to work with a group to understand the entire process.
Yeah.
Because in the past, I've kind of opened it up to really everyone in the beginning. And that was more of a function of just to allow them to see what this market's all about. And hopefully they would have asked more questions of me before they would just, you know, throw in an offer that they did not want to stand behind. It was just more of a, hey, I made an offer on a note.
Yeah, going dark, right? That's another thing, phrase we use a lot, where buyer will make an offer, seller will counter, and then at one point or another, the buyer goes dark. And I would think that most buyers who go dark, they don't agree with the numbers, but at least communicate that back. And the other thing I see often, and I'm sure you see as well, is I want to make an offer of $50,000, and tomorrow I say, oh, make it $40,000. And they change their offer without any kind of justification. What are some of the common justifications you can fade, quote unquote, fade a bid on that a seller and professionalism respects?
Yeah. So when you get that notification that you've been awarded a loan, your next task is to perform your own due diligence to verify what the tape said is what you're getting back. So we use the BPO valuation and the tax and title report. So you're running the BPO to verify that when I gave you the indicative bid, you said the property was worth $100,000. I'm coming back with the current BPO of $70,000. So instead of, like you just said, someone saying, oh gosh, I'm $30,000 less than the tape, I'm not gonna let them know. I'm not gonna answer the phone. I'm gonna hide. You know? All that's necessary is to come forward and say, you know what? Our valuation came back at 70. Based on the new value, I'm going to have to be at a price, which would be the same percentage, really, against 100 was. So if you were 70% of 100,000, you're really going to be 70% of now 70,000. And it's my job or our jobs now to present that to the client and say, here's the actual BPO they ran. It's a real number. If you ran it yourself, you're going to get the same BPO. Here's why their bid now has gone down from 70,000 to 60,000. And so, as I tell them, you know, 9 out of 10 times, they're going to look at that and say, you know what? I can accept that. We can still move forward.
Or say, you know what? No, I don't accept it. And that's justifiable. No harm, right. No foul.
Or no, I can't accept it. And here's another BPO. You know what? I can come down maybe 5, but I can't come down 10 grand. Then the person on the other side said, you know what? I think I actually can come up 5. So there is a transaction there.
Yeah.
And same thing with the tax and title. You come back with some past due taxes. They all know that it comes off the purchase price. If you come back with an issue that says that, you know, wait a minute, there's a loan ahead of this that was never released or subordinated through my findings, you know, what's going on? A lot of times the client will have that somewhere in a vault or whatever, and they'll show you that, oh, look, we didn't give it to you by accident. Here is the subordination. So a lot of things can be answered, but they can't be answered if you just don't bring them up.
Yeah. And so I'm always amazed. A couple of things there.
And I know David doesn't like this, but I'm always amazed how many times I get emails without a phone number to call.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need a phone number to call someone.
Deals get done over the phone. Absolutely. Yeah. So we need to unpack a couple of things there. First of all, I think we need to bust a myth. Why did the seller have that value at 100 if you've got a BPO that now says it's 70? Where did they come up with that 100? Are they just inflating that, trying to screw me over?
Ooh,
good question. First, they're probably going to go to their BPO that they used when they bought the loan.
Right.
So depending on the age of it, you might have one that's from 22, from 21, from 20. It could even be older than that.
Yeah.
If they have the assets in their systems, they may not order BPOs every 6 months, and right. They'll go right to a Zillow value or any other type of internet value.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they're using that, the Zillow or internet, they know that the likelihood of the BPO coming in lowers very strong.
For sure. And having been on the seller side, no, they're not trying to screw you over. No, of course not.
No.
They're trying to get a deal done, but this is the information that they had, and it's probably 2 or 3 years old, sometime when they bought the loan. So it's not somebody trying to pull the wool over your eyes or anything like that. It's just, it's old information.
Sometimes they don't want to spend the money to update it either. You know, BPO is $100. Maybe they don't want to spend $100 on all their assets to get a brand new updated BPO.
Yeah.
Some of the questions.
Let me add this one here. So sometimes they don't order a BPO because the equity could be so far above the legal balance. They're thinking, why do I need to order a BPO?
That's true.
Doesn't matter.
On the other side of that, sometimes if the old BPO is, let's say, $200,000 above the legal, and the new BPO comes back where there's only now $100,000 above the legal, the buyer wants to get a lower price, where realistically, there is no discount there because you're still well above what you figured to collect in the first place.
So the other one I wanted to just talk about for a second here is the taxes. So again, my experience, and Dave, you guys can both chime in on this, but my experience is I will go and run a title search and I'll find out that there's taxes that maybe the seller didn't have on the spreadsheet. If it's $1,000 different, if it means that I'm going to have to pay an extra $1,000, I am not even going to mention it to the seller. I am not even going to bring it up. I'm not going to try to, you know, cause any waves here. I can get the deal done and it's going to cost me an extra $1,000. If $1,000 is going to hold you back from doing that deal,
But then again, if you come back and you see $20,000 in back taxes, you have the ability to come back and counter that back and get dollar for dollar the taxes, because you're going to have to pay that tax bill.
For sure. $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 extra dollars. So that's different. But $1,000 or you know, $750 or something like that.
Yeah. I would show that to the client and say, listen, here's what I found on my report. What should I do with it?
Yeah.
Let them tell you. You're not telling them that you're gonna go lower, but they may say, oh, that's great. You know what? We'll take it off the funding.
Yeah, let them negotiate themselves. I like that.
Although that's good.
Nathan, we can't do that now with you. You just gave it away.
I tend to just say, you know what? For the sake of the deal, for the sake of the relationship, I'll eat $1,000.
Yeah.
Because I would rather be known as the guy that closes than the guy that keeps bringing back all these little piddly problems that are going to get in the way of the deal getting done.
Some
quick questions we had online, and I'll answer them really quickly. Ola asked, what state did Best Buy a non-performing note? That is a very big, open, broad question. there is no, quote unquote, bad states. There are states with laws, some with debt licenses you have to be sure you're careful of. It's the pricing you're paying. We've bought deals where in states I don't like for really good pricing, and it made it a great deal. So it's hard to answer that. Rich asked a question, if the property is free and clear and you present the offer, how do you determine the value on what you present the seller to create a note with them? So Rich, we're not really talking about creating a note. We're talking about buying the note that's already existing, right? That's a little bit different from the creative finance, which we'll get into in a little bit. We're on the side of buying the note versus creating the note. Now, if we foreclose on them and take an REO back, we can create a note, but we're not looking to push the borrower out. We're looking to actually buy from the bank the debt that's on the books and transfer to our name and own the debt and collect a mortgage payment from them or debt payment from them, right? So we're not in the idea of creating that, working with the borrower. We're working with the borrower after we buy the debt, after we own it from the bank. And we use a servicer like SN Servicing with Polios from to manage it like a property manager in the landlord space world. Hopefully that makes sense to you guys.
On the state question, you can always look up non-judicial states.
Yes.
And then also they will show you the timeline it takes and even a cost timeline for each of those states in foreclosure. So if you could find states that are 3-month foreclosure periods and it's only $2,500, to foreclose, that's what I use when I start to model out my pricing.
Yeah, each state has different rules and laws and timeframes. If you really want to get granular like that, I would suggest January 9th, join us on Tuesdays as we start our advanced class. We're going to talk about building out that bid calculator, because I think if what we're seeing, David, is a lot of people, even when we were at the conference last month, who are saying we only buy performing notes. And when we ask the question, what happens if it defaults? Their answer is, well, I only buy performing, so I'm not worried about not performing. So it's really crucial you know how a non-performing calculator works, what happens in different states, the timeline for each state, the cost for every state, and generality. So if you're interested in learning more about that, join us on January 9th or send us an email. We'll hook you up. So one of the things we're gonna transition here, what we're seeing a lot of, and I'm sure you have too, is the non-traditional residential notes for sale that we've all been accustomed to for over a decade now. And we're seeing raw land, vacant land. We're seeing wrap notes. We're seeing partials. Talk a little bit about what you've been seeing as inventory. Are you seeing more of these land, vacant land, raw land notes and wrap notes? Have you seen more of that? And what's your opinion on them? And what do you think buyers or sellers are looking for on those?
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing a mix of product these days. Right now, we are seeing the consistent pools of first lien non-performers. So we do have, I'm going to say we probably have about a 200 loan steady flow every month of that. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing specialty portfolios. Like right now, we've got a pool of 88 land loans, which, you know, I guess the real term should be raw land loans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a product for someone that is looking really to collect cash flow because sure. they're performing and they're a certain product that you'd have to understand that's a zero interest rate, but mm-hmm. you're buying them in a low 60 purchase price.
Oof,
so
nice.
There is a yield there.
Yeah.
Now, depending on how, the timing of the terms of the assets, what that yield would be. So we're seeing that type of product. We're seeing the same type of product that might have a 14-15% interest rate that of course would trade for a higher number. We are seeing seller finance notes, which the ones that I called right now, to me, are the ones that we have listed are business purpose loans. Mm-hmm. So it's a sense where people are not, there's money on the, there's cash on the sideline. Instead of going out and maybe buying the NPLs, looking for those deals, they're now moving the cash into the seller finance business purpose loans, which are attractive.
Are those more short term?
For short term. Yeah.
Yeah.
Short term. Yeah. Which are attractive loans because if someone is only getting a low teen or, you know, a 9 or a 10 return, these type of loans can get you close to a 14-15% yield. So
those are nice. Yeah.
I'm still seeing a few deals here and there of second liens.
Okay.
You know, we don't put it on the trading desk, but we do see a lot of the scratch and dent product. And so yep.
Non-QMs, you know, and scratch and dents.
Yeah. You know,
that's a big field right now. Because all these seller finance notes are non-QMs, right? Because correct. The fact of the structure the way they are. So non-QM just means that there's a non-bank originated kind of asset that there may be one little QFA, maybe something just that Fannie won't buy for certain reasons, that kind of stuff. So there's all a bunch of parameters. Are you guys seeing things like reverse mortgages and wrap notes? But I don't think wrap notes are you guys are getting involved with, but reverse mortgages, right? Where the borrower may have deceased, and they're selling those non-performing wrap notes, reverse notes.
Just started seeing that. So the last two portfolios I had probably had about maybe 5 or 10% of the pool was reverse mortgages. I just put out one today where if you look at the tape, it's pretty obvious when you see a dollar is the P&I payment that that's the way that they denote it's a reverse mortgage. I don't think I'm going to see much of that, to be honest with you. And we don't really kind of look for it or buy it ourselves just because we don't service it. It's just not an asset that we've ever been comfortable with servicing. And there is a good market for it. The guys, the big guys like the Gitsits are buying these type of portfolios. They're doing really well, really well with them. So I wish that we could be, you know, somehow intrigued to get on that side too. But we've kind of stayed away from it.
We've tried having them come on our show. They're not allowed to. We try your camera to come on. He's a dupe.
Sure.
Just curious, how come you guys don't service those? We talked about reverse mortgages a few weeks ago, and we talked about some servicers do, some servicers don't. So how come you guys don't? We could only speculate.
I think it's a little bit different for us. The CFPB, because of our size, we are looked at by the CFPB quite a bit. Uh-huh. So we really do have to follow a lot of rules and regulations and timelines and procedures that a lot of other servicers don't have to. Because they're not big enough that they're being followed. Gotcha. So there's a lot of legality in the estate part of that we really want to stay away from.
Okay. Interesting.
So one thing you mentioned in the quote unquote green room before we got live was partials. You guys are servicing or bringing partials to the availability in the servicing world. Are you guys seeing any kind of inventory about buying or selling partials?
Haven't seen any of it yet. I've had the questions, would we list partials on the trading desk? So that's kind of what spurred when we were at the Note Expo. Yeah. The group kind of got together and said, you know, we really should look further into this. So I'll say probably by the end of January, we'll have a good direction where we want to go with it. I know we definitely want to service, and we are servicing some right now on the partial side, but I think there's a couple of rules, the type of partial that it is that we have to follow right now. But I'll have a better idea at the end of January. We're going to have an executive meeting in Baton Rouge, and so we'll kind of pin down what we want to do with the partial side. Because I know there's buyers, and I know there's sellers, so...
And I think while seconds have decreased, the partial world has increased to make up for that because some people don't have the cash or they have a Roth IRA of $6,500 and they want to park it somewhere. And, you know, it's a low cost to get into a lot of partials sometimes. And it's attractive, right? Especially a second lien partial, even cheaper kind of idea. And partials are, for those who don't know, it's just you're buying a string of payments out of a whole. So you may buy, you know, 12 months of payments out of 360. Those kind of parameters. I would definitely go back. We've had a webinar on partials versus hypothecations to learn about what partials are. And there's different ways to structure a partial as a buyer and a seller. It's not just a clean cut. You know, questions like what happens when the partial defaults? How is it handled? And that's typically a conversation between the buyer and the seller to come to terms of what the exit strategy would be. But that's a great way for those who want to begin. You kind of get a helpful hand from the seller because they typically will jump in if a note defaults. But
that seems like a very good product for someone that is on the sideline, hesitant to jump in, because I would expect the person that you bought the partial from is probably there to educate you on what's going on with the entire note itself and how they got it, how they priced it, and how it goes through the servicing side too.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. So in this world, you know, what we talk about in notes and stuff like that, there are so many different notes out there, right? There's so many. Are you guys starting to entertain the large area of seller finance notes where these people are creating notes, like some people on our call, who are creating notes from an asset they own? Are you guys servicing and are you guys seeing an inventory influx of seller finance notes?
We are seeing an increase in the inquiries to service them. I'm not sure what our position has been on, because I think it comes down to loan count. So we do get a lot of inquiries where one person has one loan to a family member or someone they know, and they just need someone just to service the asset. We tend to push those off to other servicers out there.
Sure.
And we really haven't had a large originator of just seller finance notes to come to us to service. And I think for us, and I explained to them, listen, you know, we are a very hands-on servicer. Mm-hmm. And so you're paying for, you know, an extra $15 a month because we're hands-on. We are on the we are on that bar where if they go any day, a couple days delinquent, whatever. So it's just, and we're touching the asset a lot more than truly if it's just clipping coupons, you could send it somewhere else.
So one of the cool things about creative financing and the seller finance world, and those who are listening, it, they'll tell you, most of the notes they create, the borrower pays servicing fees. So that fee they incurs by us lenders is no longer needed, which is amazing. So those who are buying notes, seller finance notes, majority of them have the feature where the borrower pays whatever the servicing fee is. Now, if the note goes non-performing, you're obviously going to be on the hook for that. But just be aware that the borrower pays the performing note price, which is awesome. It helps with reducing the costs on the lender side.
Are there? It is awesome, but I think that could be an issue for us because who's our client?
Right.
The borrower who's paying the servicing fee?
Right. Very true. That can be tricky. Besides number of loans, are there any other kind of qualifications on a seller finance note, like specific things within the note that you need to be able to say, yes, we can service this note?
To be honest with you, I haven't looked into that. Okay. I haven't looked into that. So I couldn't give you a good answer to that, to be honest with you.
Okay. I'm curious, and part that comes from some of the notes that Dave and I have seen where people have given us the note and you know, it's a 2-page document and oh boy, you know, like it just, there's a lot of missing information and maybe the paperwork's not done correctly or something like that. So I'm just wondering how that would affect the servicing, if at all. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Curious. Interesting.
Yeah. It's amazing because the pricing has changed. The inventory has changed and we just have to adjust with the times. I know that you guys are a very large servicing company and I think I'm trying to think of anyone else, probably the largest broker of notes in scale at our level. Mm-hmm. There are people who do non-QM loans and stuff like that. But I think in overall, you guys are the largest broker. So we encourage those who have experience or have some kind of training, either by us or by someone that's experienced, that would like to look at assets that Polio puts out. Now, understand that Polio doesn't own these. These are brokered notes, but the legitimate sellers. So these are people he repped and did a background check, usually repeat sellers, that he can provide you in a tape list asset, and you're going to make an offer, and you're going to get time for due diligence, all that stuff. So you'll see in the pin post or the link to get his information, his data stuff. But I would like you to make sure that you are professional in what you do and make sure when you make an offer, you're respectful, you understand, you respond to him. He's and a very busy guy. Yeah.
And Dave, we actually just emailed back and forth last week. So Dave and his team are going to be at DME as well.
Yep.
Great time to come and just meet face to face. That's a big deal.
Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah.
So if those who don't know what DME is, Nathan,
Diversified Mortgage Expo, we're pumped. It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, we're 6.5 months out and we're already just like so excited. We
Nashville end of May. Make sure you get your tickets now. I'm waiting to buy my ticket probably in June for my plane flight down there. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to getting down there. It was an awesome event last year. It's not expensive. It's not $4,000 or $5,000 tickets, and you'll be there for 2 days. So if you're on either side of the fence of originating or buying notes, you have to go. So
no better place to be just to come and meet, socialize, talk with other people that are doing this. I cannot tell you how much that has built my business, just going to conferences and talking to people.
Yeah.
One of the other things I wanted to say was that, you know, use our trading desk also as an educational tool. Because as I've always said, if you are telling me that, you know, you might be telling me that this is the first time you bid, you're not comfortable, but if I was going to bid, here's what my offer would be. If I know that, I could use that and then guide you after all the bids come in and say, okay, here's where the high bid came in. Here's why your bid was here. And here's the difference. And, you know, maybe he looked at it this way and you can look at it this way. So it's just a way to keep testing your model. You need something to keep testing and testing your pricing model. Otherwise, if you don't put a bid in, and if you don't put a bid in without letting me know that you're just testing it, you know, you're never going to know where your model is, because you do need to tweak it. Every once in a while, you got to tweak that model to keep up with the market. And again, if you're bidding 10 assets and you can only buy one, if you let me know, and if I have five that I think you're the high bid on, I'll come back to you and say, listen, I know you can only buy one. Here are the five. Which one do you want to buy?
Yeah.
I'm not going to award you five when you said you can only bid one.
Yeah. And with that caveat, if you only have X dollars, how should someone who has, I had 10 grand to spend on notes. Yeah. I have five notes here. I see each one were $10,000. Should I only bid on one note then?
You can bid all five as long as you tell me. Because same example, if you tell me that you can only spend $200,000 or $10,000, if I know that before I even go back to the selling client, I'm going to go back to you first and say, listen, here's what you were awarded. What would you like to do, knowing they can only buy one or only spend $200,000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's I'm guaranteed that there's going to be someone right behind his bid on the other four. Then I would go back to say, listen, this guy was at 10. You were at 850. Can you get to 10?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that's how it's done. Talk.
Make sure I see Wendy asked a question regarding the DME. Please fill out Polio's information. Nathan will actually get that email as well. If we get confused, whatever, we'll reach out to you. We'll share the information. You can go right to the DME site and buy your tickets and fly down to Nashville and shake hands with all of us and say hello and introduce yourself. I think for beginners, the biggest thing is getting started, but being educated at the same time. It's a really big balance because I'm sure you've run into people where they've been at five conferences but never bought a note because they got scared. And I think there are people who've never been to a conference, had watched 1 hour of YouTube and makes offers. And in between is crazy, right? You know, don't be scared to make an offer, right? That's how you learn. Believe me, we've made a million mistakes, and I will make a million more. But
at
just
the same time,
started,
like you say, though, it's just because you've done real estate does not mean you can do notes. It's not the same thing. You have to learn the rules. It's a different game.
Yeah.
And so make sure you're educating yourself at the same time.
Yeah. Don't be knocking the borrower's door saying, I'm buying your note. Don't do that, right? Don't tell anyone. This is not, again, and please, for Polio's sake and our sake, if you have a list of assets, please don't send it out to everyone, anyone, and post on social media. You're signing a non-disclosure, which means you're not disclosing it to anyone else. The NDA says you're not disclosing it. Why? Why can you send a property address out there that's for sale versus a note? That note is not yours to give out. It's private data, that borrower's information, that borrower's private debt. They don't know their note's being sold. That's private information. If you publicly send it out there, you're violating your non-disclosure and you can be sued. So please, 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 when you sign the non-disclosure, don't broker notes. If you want to broker notes, you can definitely do this, but I would price it out, make the offer, and then work it out with them. But you're not sending a list of addresses to somebody blindly and call that broker it.
Right.
Ah, okay. Off my pedestal. Right? So it's awesome. This year has been a great year. We're looking forward to next year. We're going to be focused more and more on the seller finance. And reason for that is the bank loans at 3-4% are really hard to buy, right? These notes at 3-5%, we can't get, you know, capital is more expensive now. Notes are, you know, when we're buying, we got first started in 2010 and we're buying at 30 cents, 25 cents. That was easy, right? Now notes are more expensive and the cost of capital is up. So we get all that. Just make sure that when you make these offers, you kind of learn what it is. If you have your own capital, you can go get 8% all day long. That's awesome. But most people don't have the kind of cost capital of 8%. So.
All right, Dave. So you've been around a long time. You've seen market cycles. You've been through the ringer a little bit. So based on your experience and everything that you've seen and everything that you've been through, what do you see coming up in 2024? What's the market looking like for notes?
I feel it's going to kind of mimic 23. And 23, I would have been, you know, I don't see the market exploding. I don't see any major change that's going to get people to jump in or jump out. I think it's just going to be the same battle. You got to pick your lane, pick your niche. There's money to be made on these assets. There really is. You just got to pick your niche and what you're trying to accomplish. You know, the valuations are still high. If the valuations had dropped by 40%, like they had done in the last couple of cycles, and the interest rates were starting to back down, the only other pressure that's not there is force. You know, there's no force of these banks anymore to look at their ratios and say, oh gosh, I better start moving these assets because the FDIC is going to come in and take over the bank if my ratio is above 6 or 7. There's zero fear with these banks of having bad assets. And
why is that? Why is it? What's changed in that world? Is it because the fact there's not a lot of non-performers out there?
I think it's the equity position of it.
Gotcha.
I think the equity is so strong that there's no threat on that ratio. Mm-hmm. Again, it's when you have that event where valuations start to decline to a point, you know, 30 or 40%, where mm-hmm. that ratio is a big warning.
Gotcha. Are people leveraging the same way? Probably not, but are, like, if they are taking out a second, I guess there's still those ratios in place. I'm trying to just gauge, like, how close are they getting to the wire there? You would expect
that second liens should be a product in the next 12 to 18 months. Because you would definitely expect that those second liens and HELOCs, home improvement loans, were done on the properties from last year that were, you know, that were extremely high.
Yeah, so I would expect that same thing.
That LTV, that CLTV now is really going to get well above 100%.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's crazy. But yeah, you're right. We're back to the old times where when there's a ton of equity, people are going to take loans out for reasons they need to, reasons they don't need to, for all kinds of reasons. And that's when the cycle of seconds will grow. And I think for those who love seconds, it's a great time. The only downfall, again, is, you know, I guess interest rates will be high for the seconds created. I'd be curious to see what the rates are on the seconds. I mean, if a second rate's at 6% when it was at 3%, it's hard to buy even a 6% note and move it to a 10. It's hard, right? It's still hard to do. So I'll be curious how that kind of trickles out, but it's just another cycle, you know? But it's awesome. Well, Polio, it was a pleasure, man. Hang out for the after hours. For everyone else, please feel free to jump out. If you are originator, feel free to reach out to us. We have a great situation coming up for you privately next Friday. If you are a note buyer looking to learn about non-performing and calculations and really advanced stuff, take a look at our January 9th beginning class for advanced work for note buyers. And then from there, we start 2024 all over again with a brand new kind of series of stuff. Our focus next year is going to be really about setting our goals, AI, silver finance, and whatnot. So we're looking forward to it. But Polio, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will disconnect from here.
Thank you, guys, and enjoy the holiday.